Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into a really interesting document. The Western Cape Governments, that's the WCG Green Economy Indicator Report for 2022.
Yeah, our goal is only to give you a solid overview, pull out the key bits of data and, you know, the strategic thinking behind it all.
Exactly. And this report, it covers the financial years 2020 up to 2022.
Mm-hmm. And it's got like two main jobs. First, it's there to help stakeholders see how the WCG is doing on the green economy front.
Right.
And second, maybe more critically, it puts the province's policies into context, especially considering, well, the tough national picture.
Yeah, that national picture is quite something. The report lays it all out across five main areas: natural resources, resource productivity, socioeconomy, environmental quality of life, and policy and finance.
Right.
But it kicks off setting the scene, doesn't it? Post-COVID South Africa. And yeah, there was that GDP bounce back in 2021, about 4.6%.
Mm-hmm, there was. But that good news is immediately sort of overshadowed by these really deep structural problems the country faces.
And the report doesn't shy away from that. It highlights the really concerning inequality and the job losses made worse by COVID.
It's quite stark. The figures from Q3 2021 they cite are, well, frankly, shocking. Unemployment at nearly 35%.
35%.
And youth unemployment in almost unbelievable 66.5%. And the Gini coefficient, that measure of inequality, stuck way up at 63 in 2022. Just shows how entrenched it is.
That's a heavy baseline to start from. And it connects that social crisis right into the environmental one, too. South Africa, it notes, is the most carbon-intensive economy in the G20.
Still hugely reliant on coal, what, 87% of electricity?
Yeah, 87%.
And that dependency creates this massive transition challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, hitting the country's climate targets, the NDCs, by 2030. The report estimates that needs investment of around R596 billion every single year.
Wow. R596 billion annually. That scale is just enormous, especially when you think about the unemployment figures you just mentioned. How do you fund that?
Exactly. Which sort of brings the focus back to the Western Cape Zone strategy, which seems very focused on building regional resilience, particularly in energy.
Okay, yeah, this is where it gets really interesting for me. They talk about the Municipal Energy Resilience Initiative, MER. The aim is ambitious. Help get 500 megawatts of new generation capacity going by 2025.
And a key move, a really practical step, was lifting the license cap for embedded businesses generating their own power from just 1 megawatt up to 100 megawatts.
That's a huge jump.
It is. It's basically saying to private investors, come on in, the water's fine. It's designed to really speed things up and build energy security outside of the strained national grid.
And it seems like they're taking a similar approach with water resilience, focusing on what they call ecological infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And this part had a statistic that genuinely surprised me. Invasive alien plants, stuff like Port Jackson and Rooikrans, they reduce the yield of the Western Cape water supply system by about 38 million cubic meters a year.
Yeah, that's roughly the size of the Wemmershoek Dam's entire volume just lost every year. It's a staggering ecological cost.
But there's a potential solution outlined, right?
Yes, and it makes economic sense, too. The report suggests spending around R372 million on clearing those invasives could actually generate 50 billion liters more water per year within 5 years.
50 billion liters?
And create jobs in the process. So it's presented as a real win-win.
Okay, shifting gears slightly to the socioeconomic side and inclusivity. The report confirms what many suspected. COVID hit women disproportionately hard.
Yeah, the figures are grim. Up to nearly half, 49% of women in the Western Cape apparently lost their jobs in just the first 3 months of lockdown.
That's devastating. The WCG's response mentioned includes specific events like Women in Green Economy forums.
Mm-hmm. Trying to actively embed gender equality into how the recovery is planned. It's not just an afterthought.
And linked to that, they also highlight support for the circular economy, specifically helping small waste businesses.
Right. The Small and Micro Waste Enterprises Support Program. It's about making them more efficient, tackling skills gaps, but also, crucially, integrating waste pickers and small recyclers properly into the formal municipal systems.
Bringing them into the fold, essentially.
Exactly. Recognizing the vital role they play, but often informally.
So, wrapping this all up, what's the big takeaway here? It seems the report is saying, look, we've got these massive immediate crises, jobs, power, the pandemic's legacy.
Mm-hmm. Multiple crises hitting at once.
But this difficult moment is also framed as a critical junction, an opportunity, maybe even a necessity, to pivot the whole economic model towards something greener, more inclusive, more sustainable in the long run.
But, and it's a big but, That whole shift hinges completely on getting the funding needed, like that huge national figure we mentioned, and actually putting strong, clear green policies into action. It won't just happen on its own.
Which leads us to a final thought, something for you, the listener, to maybe ponder.
Given those persistent, really high unemployment and inequality numbers we talked about, alongside the absolutely massive investment needed nationally that are $596 billion a year for the climate transition.
Yeah.
What needs to come first?
Yeah. Is it tackling the immediate social crises head on, the poverty, the joblessness? Or is it pouring investment into those big climate mitigation projects as rapidly as possible? Or can they even be separated? It's a tough balancing act, isn't it? Something to think about.